It is another week. This is Andrew Wood, Executive Director of Hope Resource Center. Thank you so much for tuning in, whether that be live over at Joy 620 or you're listening to the podcast at investinghope.com or iTunes or Google Play, wherever podcasts are found. I'm going to apologize starting. I guess it's been a couple weeks since I've even been in here. Was sick last week, and you'll be able to tell by my voice today that it's kind of hit or miss, but was sick last week, the week before. The Wood family was dealing with the loss of a September, which is a long 14-year-old Great Pyrenees that was that came to our family when my wife and I got married. Actually, right before we got married, September was the first dog we brought into our marriage, and she made it almost to 14 years and passed away a couple weeks ago. So I had to do the husband and dad thing and take care of that situation. That was tough on the whole family. If you're a pet lover, if you're someone that has dogs, that's always a tough one. And so having four young kids, that was some conversations had to occur. And so that's why I wasn't here 2 weeks ago. And then last week, like I said, I was sick. And so, but I'm back today. And man, we have, for those that aren't in the state of Tennessee listening to this, just bear with me. But the first segment, we're going to talk about what's going on, what happened last night here in the state of Tennessee, mainly in Middle Tennessee. Some bad weather in Knoxville, but not quite as bad as what occurred in Middle Tennessee, the area that I grew up in, and you know, with Nashville and south of Nashville, and then really the weather just kind of went right up 40 east and did some damage all the way through. And so looking over at WSMV, which is the NBC affiliate there in Nashville, here's what they have to say. So the Tennessee Emergency Management Agency reports 19 people were killed in overnight tornadoes throughout Tennessee. The death toll jumped to 19 today, TEMA spokeswoman Maggie Hannon said. After police and fire crews spent hours pulling survivors and bodies from wrecked buildings. The National Weather Service surveyors have preliminary found damage equal to at least an EF3 tornado in Mount Juliet. That's Wilson County, which is right past Lebanon, between Lebanon and Nashville, with winds between 155 to 160 miles per hour. Surveyors observed damage in Donelson and Davidson County, showing at least an EF3 tornado damage with winds between 160 and 165 miles per hour. Governor Bill Lee said at a press conference earlier today, at least 9 people have died in Tennessee as a result of overnight tornadoes that struck throughout the state. Now, that number has increased since his press conference. Deaths were reported in Benton, Davidson, Putnam, and Wilson counties. 2 people were confirmed dead in Wilson County, along with a 3rd person who died as a result of a medical issue. This number right here says 4 people died in Putnam County, but the last number that I received was 16 to 18 people have died in Putnam County alone. And if you're not familiar with the state of Tennessee, that's around Putnam County would be Cookeville, Baxter, that area. So past Crossville, past Monterey, and then you would get to Putnam County, borders Overton County, and just a scary situation there last night. 2 people were reported dead in East Nashville, according to Metro Police. Interstate 40 in Wilson County was closed as the storm passed due to high power lines breaking down over the interstate. They were reopened at noon today. Last night was a reminder of how fragile life is, Nashville Mayor John Cooper said in a press conference. Governor Lee said only essential state employees should report to work on Tuesday because of the weather. He said don't travel into Nashville if you don't have to. Lee said he spoke with the White House this morning. He said the White House has asked what they can do, and the state is still assessing the damage and will apply for federal help once assessed. 2 shelters have been opened in Nashville at East Magnet High School in East Nashville and Centennial Sportsplex. President Donald Trump said on Tuesday that he would be visiting Tennessee later in the week to survey the damage. It looks like that will be this Friday. In Nashville, 30 fire department personnel were injured while responding to calls on Tuesday morning, according to the Nashville Fire Department Chief William Swan. Swan said 48 buildings in Nashville have collapsed. Search crews are going door-to-door now searching for people. The most heavily damaged areas include Germantown, East Nashville, Donelson, and Hermitage. In Nashville, Bridgestone Arena will open at 11 to provide meals for those impacted by the tornadoes. Putnam County officials later said at least three people have died from the storm, and then a short time later, they confirmed that that number has increased. And like I said, it looks like that number is around 18 right now. At least 25 homes in Benton County have been damaged, and four of the homes are total losses. And the news goes on and on and on. And if you'll notice that some of that news is kind of out of sync, but that, you know, Channel 4 there in Nashville is doing the best they can to keep it updated. And so they're updating the article as the day goes on. But one thing that we need to look at, when anytime these things happen, a lot of focus is given to, and rightfully so, Nashville, East Nashville in particular, was heavily damaged. And so a lot of the news agencies, a lot of folks on Twitter are focusing on Nashville. It's the state capital. It's a big city. A lot of damage. A lot of people are going to have to rally together to get back on their feet. But a lot of times when things like this happens, what we do is we overlook the small rural towns that are affected. And so between here in Knoxville and Nashville in Middle Tennessee, you have small rural towns, Putnam County. You have Mount Juliet, which is still it's a town that's growing, but it's still a small town there in Wilson County. And so we at times neglect those smaller areas. Those are areas that 18 people dying in Putnam County is, in terms of population, that is a huge percentage to lose in one night to a tornado. And that's why the president has reached out. That's why the president is going to be visiting the state of Tennessee on Friday, is because this is a big, big deal. One thing that we'll notice, just like we noticed here in East Tennessee when the fires hit the Smokies and Pigeon Forge and Gatlinburg and those areas were under fire, quite literally under fire, when everything was catching fire. And you can even still see the remnants of that driving through those areas today. What we saw was we saw a lot of Tennesseans come together and rally around our neighbors. And that's what you're going to see in Nashville. That's what you're going to see in Putnam County. That's what you're going to see in Mount Juliet. That's what you're going to see in Donelson and Hermitage and all those areas, is you're going to see people come from all across this state, all across the country, to step up and to love their neighbor. And, you know, I saw somebody post today, we're not going to sit around and wait for the government to do something. We're going to go out and help our neighbor. That's not necessarily a knock on the government. That's a mantra of the South. That's kind of who we are. And when we see this need, that there's been places that have been flooded, their websites have been flooded with donations. There's been people coming from all over the place bringing water and clothes and anything that people may need. I saw a guy on the news earlier today that he owns a storage facility, and it had a little bit of damage, but not a lot of damage there in East Nashville. Excuse me. And he said that he's offering 30 days free to anyone there in the Nashville area that needs to put some stuff in storage while they get back on their feet. And so what you're going to find is you're going to see musicians, especially there in Nashville. You're going to see folks come out, just like Dolly Parton did here in East Tennessee, to rally around our neighbors. And there's something that we can learn from that. That even in the midst, even here on this Super Tuesday, as elections are occurring across this country, and as some would say, our country has never been more divided. I would argue against that, but we certainly have some division in our country. What you're finding here in Tennessee with the destruction of a tornado is you're going to see people get out and you're going to see people help their neighbor. They're not going to ask them, are you a Republican? Are you a Democrat? They're not going to say, do you believe in God, or are you an atheist, or are you Muslim, or are you a Buddhist? No, they're just going to say, hey, I'm here, and how can I help? You're going to see the Southern Baptist Convention with the disaster relief crews all over the state rally in support of their neighbors. And again, they're not going to say, well, are you Southern Baptist? Are you a Christian? No, they're simply going to step up and provide help as needed. And so as we look at this, And as people are voting today, and we don't have any information yet because polls aren't closed just yet, but it's going to be interesting to see what comes from the election today. But one thing that's amazing to me is that even in the midst of the carnage that occurred last night, we had our state officials doing everything they could to get polling places back in place, maybe close a polling place here and shuffle some things around and get it where folks can still vote. Now, why do we do that? Now, some would argue, well, why are we taking the time to change some things in the middle of this travesty that occurred with the tornado? But it's because we take that stuff serious. We take voting serious and the freedom to do that. And so will it affect turnout today? Certainly it will. But one thing that we do know is Tennesseans are going to rally to help Tennesseans today. And so if you're listening, wherever you're listening, I would just encourage you to say a prayer for those that are struggling, those that lost a home last night. We have Donaldson Christian there in Nashville, DCA. Donaldson Christian Academy. The school was completely leveled. And so even in the midst of that darkness, we look at that and we go, well, if the tornado would have happened during the day, there might have been students in that school. But since it's happened in the middle of the night, no students were injured in that school. Middle schools in Wilson County demolished and in different areas there in Mount Juliet. And so we need some prayer in Tennessee. We also need some assistance. We need people to step up and help and donate. And we know that folks are going to do that. And so it's always tough. You know, I got to work this morning and folks were telling me that their phones were going off and they were up at 4:30 in the morning seeking shelter. At the Woodhouse, we slept. My phone didn't go off. My wife's phone didn't go off. The kids stayed in their beds. And so I thank the Lord that nothing occurred there in Carnes, because we'd have slept through it. And so I'm thankful that nothing major, at least that I've seen, has occurred in Knoxville. But a lot to clean up and a lot of things to happen there in Middle Tennessee. People still missing. And we just pray that they find these folks. And that they're okay and they're alive. And one thing to note, I was talking to my father-in-law this morning, and he lives in Monterey off a back road that's off of another back road that then goes off of another back road. I mean, he's away from everything. There's no houses near him. And he was telling me this morning that he got up in he's got 100 acres there. And he said as he was driving to work, there was a car bumper in his field. And that stuff came from. Just to tell you how powerful that tornado was, that it was slinging debris even up on Monterey Mountain where my father-in-law lives. And so, just when we think we're invincible and that when we think we can handle anything, a tornado comes through, floods come through, fire comes through, and really shows us just how fragile life is. And so a lot of people went to bed last night thinking everything was going to be okay and they were going to wake up as a family this morning. And some of those folks, that did not occur. And so pray for them. Pray for those that have lost children. There's been some children that have died in this. Those that have lost grandparents, mom or dad, brother or sister. Just pray for those families. We would appreciate it. We'll talk more when we come back. There's a war between guilt and grace. So as we continue the conversation, again, please be praying for those in Tennessee that are dealing with the aftermath of terrible tornadoes last night. And as we shift gears a little bit, I do want to look around at what's going on around the country in terms of life and abortion. And so what we've seen over the last few weeks has been interesting. We saw a Democratic field of candidates that were, enough to fill two debates on two different nights, whittle down to 10, then even go further where Andrew Yang dropped out. And then over the weekend, we learned that Joe Biden wins South Carolina by about 50%, which didn't surprise a lot of folks. And then after that news came out, then we had Mayor Pete dropped out of the race. Senator Klobuchar, Amy Klobuchar, dropped out of the race. So we're still left with Elizabeth Warren. We have Joe Biden, Bernie Sanders, Tom Steyer dropped out of the race. Mayor Bloomberg is still in the fight. And so today is Super Tuesday. The interesting thing is, because of early voting, a lot of folks have already voted. And I bet a lot of people, some at least, voted for Mayor Pete. Some voted for Amy Klobuchar. Some for others. And they dropped out before Super Tuesday. And so here's what I think happened. If you want my analysis, here's what I think occurred. I think the establishment of the Democratic Party sees the writing on the wall, and they're really, 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 extremely, really nervous that Bernie Sanders is going to win the nomination. And then they're looking and going, okay, if Bernie Sanders, a devout socialist, wins the nomination, that means everybody down ticket at election time. That means those that are running for state legislators, those that are running for state Senate seats, those that are running for Congress seats, those that are running for U.S. Senate seats are going to have to hit the campaign trail, and they're going to be looking at a socialist at the top of the ticket. And if you have a Congress race in a purple state, and by purple state I mean a middle-of-the-road state that's not left, not right, somewhere in the middle, could go either way. If you have a congressman with a D beside his name running in that state, he's going to have to defend a Bernie Sanders. Either that, or he's going to have to attack a Bernie Sanders, and neither of those are a win for the party. And so here's what I think happened. I think over the weekend, after Biden won South Carolina like he did, I think some phone calls were made, some promises were made, some even may even say a quid pro quo was made, and said, look, Mayor Pete, wait your turn, and if you drop out of this race and endorse Biden, which he did yesterday, if you do that, we will guarantee you a fill in the blank, maybe a cabinet position. Maybe we'll support you to be governor of Indiana, maybe a U.S. Senate seat there in Indiana. But something happened. Some political conversation, strategy conversation occurred, and Mayor Pete at that moment said, you know what, it is in my best interest and the best interest of the party to step aside. Amy Klobuchar, I believe a similar conversation occurred. And so you got to hand it to them in one way. At least they allowed for their ego not to get in the way. Usually what you have in these cases is everyone on the outside is going, look, if all of y'all weren't running, you know, you probably could beat a Bernie Sanders. But instead, all of you are running, and you're not able to beat him. So we'll see. That's why tonight is important. Biden's going to do well, but from the polls that I've seen, Bernie Sanders is going to do really well in California, in Texas. And what I've seen as well is Joe Biden had a great political structure, campaign structure there in South Carolina. But the rest of the country, it's been pretty much non-existent. And so I don't know. I don't know what his apparatus looks like for the rest of the way, what kind of campaign structure he has in these other states. But we shall see. Tonight's going to be a big night for a lot of folks as Super Tuesday occurs. Many states, including Tennessee, will be one of the states voting today in the primary. One thing we also got to keep an eye on is we're seeing record turnout in the Republican primary in a uncontested presidential primary. So no one's running against President Trump in the Republican primary, which means a lot of folks, typically in those instances when the incumbent is unopposed, a lot of folks stay home. But what we're seeing is a flood of folks going to the polls to vote for Donald Trump in the Republican primary, which shows you the excitement for a lot of folks, which points to a big, big election time there when we get to the general election. But as we look at that, and as we talk about some of the lack of discussion around abortion when it comes to the Democratic primary, I thought it was interesting. There's an article over at The Advocate And the headline says, meet the anti-abortion Louisiana Democrat at the heart of the Supreme Court's abortion debate. And her name is Representative Katrina Jackson. She's a Democrat there in Louisiana. And it's interesting to me, it's interesting to me that there's 21 million pro-life Democrats in this country. And they really don't have a home at the moment because the Democratic Party has said pretty adamantly, look, if you are pro-life, you just don't have a place here. Bernie has said that. Mayor Pete has said that. Elizabeth Warren has said that. Tom Perez, the chairman of the DNC, has said that. So this article is interesting because it talks about a Democrat there in Louisiana that is adamantly pro-life. And here's what the article says. State Senator Katrina Jackson seems like an unlikely general to lead the anti-abortion movement into a U.S. Supreme Court battle. Throughout her 8 years in the state legislature, the Monroe Democrat has been a leader in the Legislative Women's Caucus and the Legislative Black Caucus. She's made impassioned pleas for restoring voting rights to convicted felons. She has sided with gun restrictions. She's joined efforts to abolish the death penalty. And she supports increasing the state's minimum wage, just to name a few of the positions she shares with the more liberal wing of her party. But when it comes to abortion, she established herself as a leading voice, not just on the state level, but on a national stage. In the fight to bring an end to what she has said she considers a modern-day genocide, her efforts, championed by then-Governor Bobby Jindal, have now made it to the U.S. Supreme Court by way of a 2014 law that would require abortion providers in Louisiana have admitting privileges at a local hospital. The court is set to hear oral arguments in the case on Wednesday with Jackson, the legislation's author, in attendance. For the second year in a row, Jackson was a speaker at the March for Life rally in Washington, one of the largest anti-abortion events each year. Notice they keep saying anti-abortion, not pro-life, but that's just that's how they want to paint pro-lifers, is simply anti-abortion. But the reality is, we are anti-abortion, but first and foremost, we are pro-life. That drives why we are against abortion, is because the love of life. The article continues, multiple attempts to interview Jackson were unsuccessful, but those close to her describe her as having a deep commitment to pro-life causes. She's a really courageous, smart woman. I just have so much respect for her integrity, said Kristen Day, executive director of Democrats for Life. Being a pro-life Democrat can be a terribly lonely road to take. She's so steadfast and vocal about it. Former state rep Frank Hoffman, a West Monroe Republican who also took charge on several anti-abortion bills while in office, also commended Jackson's steadfast commitment to the issue. Katrina is a very pro-life legislator. She's a great person, he said. We're hopeful for a good Supreme Court decision. Jackson, who often dresses in brightly colored blazers and sparkling statement necklaces, is known in the legislature for a near constant smile and her good-natured ribbing of fellow lawmakers, especially ones whose bills she plans to speak against. But she also uses her chops as a lawyer to forge paths for her priorities, and Republicans describe her as a tough negotiator. Her fellow Democrats who oppose the tougher abortion restrictions often tiptoe around direct criticism of her role in its passage. This Supreme Court case is just the latest way to try to dismantle Roe v. Wade as the law of the land, said Senator Karen Carter Peterson, a New Orleans Democrat who is also in the state Senate. Every woman should be able to receive reproductive health care without government interference, and we should be making it easier for women to receive the care they need, not harder. After Jindal signed the 2014 law, the New Orleans Abortion Fund released a statement criticizing both Jindal and Jackson for the, quote, audacity to celebrate its signing. The argument behind the admitting privileges law is that it will make the abortion safer. It passed with bipartisan support, the House on 88-5 vote, and the Senate 34-3. During the little debate it received, it was never openly championed as a potential step in taking down the landmark Roe v. Wade ruling. Unlike neighboring Texas, which passed a similar law the year before, the measure didn't prompt raucous protests or 13-hour filibusters. But if the court rules in favor of Jackson's bill, both sides agree it could set off a wave of anti-abortion laws in other states, including changes to waiting periods and how late into a pregnancy it can be terminated. Louisiana currently bans abortions after 20 weeks and requires a 24-hour waiting period between an initial doctor's visit and the procedure. Like Jackson, Louisiana Governor John Bel Edwards, a Democrat, also supports abortion restrictions and campaigned on an anti-abortion platform. He said, in Louisiana, the majority of Democrats who are elected are pro-lifers. Jackson told the 2020 March for Life crowd in January. Every day that I walk into the state capitol, I'm greeted by pro-lifers, regardless if they are black, white, Republican, Democrat, male, or female, because we know in unity we have to fight like we never fought before. Jackson, who regularly receives positive feedback on her official Facebook page from people who share her views on abortion, spoke of her belief that the decade will mark an end to abortion. And she went as far as saying, "We will never stop. It's just that important," she said at the March for Life. "It's the most important thing we could ever fight for in our lives." And so I wanted to read that to you because I think it's interesting that we have, when we watch the national news, it's as if there are no Democrats that are pro-life. When you hear from presidential candidates, it's as if there are no Democrats that are pro-life. That's just not true. That's not true. And as conservatives, we need to look at this and go, there's opportunity there to find middle ground with folks. And so there's opportunity in a state like Louisiana that pushed a bill that may have a lasting ramifications across this country for pro-lifers. And the bill was sponsored by a Democrat. And the governor of the state is also a Democrat and also supports the bill. You see, so we can get behind that. And in terms of strategy, I don't understand why the Democratic Party hasn't latched on to that. They should make her a star of the party. And in the division that we've seen across this country, what they probably would do is unify a lot of people. But instead, they are adamant in their opposition to anything pro-life. And they do that because Planned Parenthood. They do that because the abortion industry is powerful. You know, it's interesting. You constantly hear about when there's a shooting, what do you hear? You hear attacks on the NRA. Now, NRA's never killed anyone. And frankly, a member of the NRA has never participated in one of the mass shootings. But when there's a shooting, everyone attacks the NRA. They're the ones. You have presidential candidates right now saying, "We're going to get rid of the NRA." When Planned Parenthood is not attacked, they're celebrated. They're celebrated from a lot of folks, even though they are ending the lives of over 300,000 babies every single year. And this law that was just talked about that's going to be looked at the Supreme Court, all it simply does is says, if you're going to perform abortions, you need to have admitting privileges at the hospital. And so when we come back, we're going to look more in depth at what that means, what that court ruling possibly could mean for the country. We'll talk more when we come back. So as we continue the conversation and look to some big-time court hearings that are going on in Washington at the Supreme Court tomorrow on Wednesday, if you're listening to this live, it's tomorrow. If you're not, then it's Wednesday is when March 4th is when the oral arguments are going to be heard. And so what does that mean? What does that look like? Why is that important? There's a great piece over at National Review that talks about that. So on Wednesday, the Supreme Court will hear oral arguments in June. Medical Services versus Russo, the first case involving abortion to come before the court since the confirmation of Justice Brett Kavanaugh. State abortion providers are challenging a Louisiana law that, in case of emergency, requires doctors who perform abortions to have admitting privileges at a local hospital. Until recently, the case was known as June Medical Services versus Gee, in reference to Rebecca Gee, who was Secretary of the Louisiana Department of Health when the lawsuit began. In June Medical, the court will consider whether Louisiana's admitting privileges law violates the, quote, undue burden standard set forth in Planned Parenthood versus Casey, a 1992 Supreme Court case that serves as precedent for U.S. abortion jurisprudence. This rather nebulous standard requires that courts strike down any law deemed to impose an undue burden on women's ability to obtain an abortion. In 2016, the court in Whole Woman's Health versus Hellerstedt struck down a Texas provision similar to Louisiana's. Justice Stephen Breyer, who authored the opinion for the 5-3 majority, wrote that the Texas law provisions did not confer benefits to women sufficient to justify the burdens it imposed. This was determined to make the law an undue burden, and so it was struck down as unconstitutional. Despite efforts from abortion rights supporters to claim otherwise, the Louisiana law in question isn't the same as the law in Texas, and June Medical isn't fated to play out the way that whole women's health did. Last fall, the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals upheld the Louisiana law on part of the grounds that, unlike Texas, its admitting privileges requirement wouldn't force any abortion clinics to close. Quote, there is no evidence that any of the clinics will close as a result of the act. The Fifth Circuit opinion reads, the only permissible finding under this record is that no clinics will likely be forced to close on account of the act. End quote. In Whole Woman's Health, by contrast, the Supreme Court concluded that Texas law had resulted in the closure of about half of the abortion clinics in the state. That distinction enabled the court to take June Medical as opponents of the Louisiana law claim that the Fifth Circuit ruling contradicts the decision in Whole Woman's Health. But that's not the only question on which the Supreme Court is being asked to rule. Louisiana also has filed a cross petition asking the court to consider whether abortion providers have third-party standing to challenge health and safety regulations on behalf of women, as they are doing in this case. As Ed Whalen has explained, third-party standing typically requires a close relationship between the parties, as well as some kind of hindrance that prevents the person who possesses the right from protecting her own interests. In short, Louisiana is suggesting that abortion providers do not have standing to challenge state regulations aimed at protecting women, especially because their distinct financial interest in performing abortion procedures. Rather than representing women with whom they have a close relationship or women who can't challenge these laws for themselves, abortion providers actually have a conflict of interest with women when it comes to safety laws. If the court were to determine that abortion providers cannot challenge abortion regulations on behalf of women, it would drastically reduce the number of cases brought against state laws seeking to protect women from unsafe abortion practices. In the course of defending its law, Louisiana has provided abundant evidence that abortion providers in the state have a history of violating other state laws, offering substandard health care and refusing to ensure that staff are competent medical professionals. Now listen to that. Louisiana has provided abundant evidence that abortion providers in the state have a history of violating other state laws. Now you don't hear that, do you? You don't hear that on the news. You don't hear the president of Planned Parenthood coming out and calling those abortion clinics to a higher standard. No, you don't hear that because their goal is abortion at all cost. The article goes further, quote, the admitting privileges requirement performs a real and previously unaddressed credentialing function that promotes the well-being of women seeking abortion, end quote. The Fifth Circuit wrote in its opinion upholding the law. Public records and expert testimony have revealed that Louisiana abortion clinics, including June Medical Services, have failed to report possible rapes of minors, hired radiologists and ophthalmologists to perform abortions, and neglected basic medical practices such as failing to monitor the vital signs of a sedated woman. I mean, that seems pretty awful, right? It's not extreme to say you should have admitting privileges at a hospital. It's not extreme to say, hey, in worst case scenario, you should be able to get these people to a hospital and taken care of. Another important detail in the case is that Louisiana admitting privileges law treats abortion providers the same way that it treats all medical professionals who perform surgeries. State law requires all medical staff at ambulatory surgery centers to have admitting privileges at nearby hospitals, no matter what procedures they perform. The law in question merely requires abortion clinics to meet the same standards that every other licensed surgical facility in the state must meet. Now think about that. So all they're doing is holding them to the same standard as any other surgical center. Now, why would the abortion industry have an issue with that? Because abortion industry has told me for years that, look, this is about women's health. We are a legit medical clinic. So if that's all true, and this is just another part of reproductive rights, well, what's wrong with having admitting privileges just like a place that does surgery on a knee or on an ankle? Abortion right advocates lobbying against the law are essentially demanding that abortion providers be exempt from the safety standards properly applied to every other type of surgical medical procedure. Why would an industry that claims to prioritize women's health fight regulation aimed at ensuring that women who seek abortions can receive emergency care? It makes a great deal of sense that those who profit from abortion would wish to eliminate Louisiana's law. It makes little sense that anyone who cares about women's health would cheer them on in that effort. Again, if it's so important, if women's health is so important, and the safety of women is so important, then frankly, we don't even need a law to put this in place for the abortion industry. Wouldn't they put this in place for themselves without a law? You see, but it's not simply about safety of women. It's about we make a lot of money off abortion. And they would argue abortion is not that big of a deal. It's not invasive. Now, go read stories of those that have had abortions and you'll see that that's not true. Especially surgical abortions. So this law isn't extreme. So it's going to be interesting to see the oral arguments that are put forward tomorrow on Wednesday. And it's going to be interesting to see what the court decides. This will be Kavanaugh's first go at it. Anything dealing with abortion. And so we'll see. We'll see what happens. But if you're listening out there and maybe you are pro-choice or maybe you have a friend that just doesn't seem to understand why we are pro-life or why we are trying to, what they would argue, make folks jump through hoops to get an abortion. The question that I would have, is if we care deeply about women's health, and let's just say you would argue that abortion is a woman's right, it's a reproductive right, it's just along the same line of any other care they may receive. Well, then why wouldn't you want to make sure that they're being held to the proper standards? Why should abortion facilities in Louisiana be exempt from the rules that every other surgical center has there in Louisiana? You don't see orthopedic surgeons going and suing, hey, you're requiring me to have something that I don't need. No, you don't see them suing. But see, all of this is a charade. They want to ramp up their base and they want to say, look, they're just trying to end abortion. And sure, I'll even say, look, every motivation I have, every law that I support, the motivation comes from wanting to end abortion. I'm not going to act as if it isn't. But on the face, this law by itself simply is trying to make the scenario a better and safer place for that mom, for that woman. So if you're a feminist, wouldn't you want that? Wouldn't you want higher standards for the procedures? I mean, that seems to be the logical thing to say. Of course, with the abortion issue, logic tends to go out the window. But we'll keep an eye on it, and I'll update you as the oral arguments are had, and any decision that comes out, you know we'll cover it right here, as we always do. We'll talk more when we come back. I'm going home where the streets are golden. Every chain is broken. Oh, I wanna go. Oh, I wanna go home where every fear is gone. I'm in your open arms where I belong. Home. So we're in the last segment. Finally, we made it. And you know, and like I said, I hadn't been here in 2 weeks, and so it kind of flies by. There was other things I wanted to talk about, but you know, we do what we have to do here on the show. And so, thank you again for listening. Again, if you want to learn more about Hope, you can at investinghope.com. Also, that's a great place for you to go if you want to register for our banquet. Our banquet's coming up April 30th at the Press Room. It's going to be amazing. We have valet parking, all kinds of stuff happening. Going to share amazing stories. Meeting with somebody tomorrow to talk through one of the amazing stories we're going to be sharing with you. And so very, very excited about that night, April 30th. It's going to be a blast. You, again, can register at investinghope.com. Just click on the events tab, and there you go. It's free to attend. It is a fundraiser, so at some point I will be asking you for money, but it is free for you to come and enjoy the night, we would certainly welcome that. It's going to be a blast. As we finish up, I would just point you again to the devastation that's occurred in the state of Tennessee over the last 24 hours. And so if you're listening to this show, there is a strong possibility that you are a praying person, that you believe there is an author of all of this, that there is a God that we serve, and that nothing surprises him. And that you may even say that that even in the atrocity that we saw, the terrible, terrible natural disaster that we saw last night, that even points to Genesis 3, that when the world was fractured, we deal with these things. And so the brokenness is around us. But this gives us opportunities to go and love our neighbor well. And so if we are to love our neighbor in the good times, when everything is going well, we certainly need to step out and love our neighbor during these tragic times. There's going to be folks that are reaching out that have lost loved ones. There's going to be kids that are scared to go back to school. There's going to be folks that have lost their home, lost their businesses, their livelihood. There's going to be folks that over the next few days, they are looking for that loved one. Cell phone service and different things, not great right now in Middle Tennessee. And so there may be somebody you're trying to reach out to, and you haven't been able to get a hold of them. I would just encourage you to pray for these families and the things that they're going to be going through, not just over the next few days, but the weeks, the months, and even years that they're going to be dealing with this. And so it's a tough time. It's always tough when you see your neighbors struggling, no matter where they are in this country. But I'll admit, I'm a little biased when something happens in the state of Tennessee. It gets me. And so be praying for those that are dealing with loss over the next few days. Be praying for our governor who's trying to lead through this kind of, I'm trying to think, one of his first kind of big things to occur weather-wise since he's been governor. Be praying for the local personnel, local first responders in these areas that are going to be staying up late at night and working throughout the day to find people and help people. Be praying for the disaster relief teams that are going to be going to those areas, the pastors that are stepping out to love on these communities, the principals, the teachers that are going to be stepping out, all of those things that are going to be happening. This is when small communities come together. Be praying for those in Putnam County that are going to be struggling, trying to figure out what to do next and how to clean up what's in front of them. And you know, Scripture tells us to weep with those who weep. And so this is an opportunity for you to, we certainly want to rejoice with those who rejoice when time calls for that. But this is one of those moments where we simply mourn with our neighbors and pray for them. And I trust that you'll do that. We'll talk to you next week.